Okay, fuck off. Max
Verstappen might turn that down a bit. That's a bit loud in my ears.
It's not in mine.
That was absolutely brilliant.
Oh, great. That's not actually turning down.
No.
Sergio Perez is giving it everything. Oh, no, Maggie. That was so not right.
Hello.
It's fine. It'll be fine.
Have you changed the Monkey Seat logo? George Russell out of this race. It looks all dirty.
Ricardo makes contact there with Kevin Magnussen, and there's a second contact.
I literally thought I had something on my screen.
Now, if you're referring to the little black flicks that look like kind of paint flicks, they've been there since we designed the logo.
Yeah, no one has a clue what we're talking about because we've just started halfway through a conversation.
Yeah, that's fine. It's kind of very on brand for us, though, isn't it? Carl's just noticed something with the Monkey Seat logo that's been the same for 4 years.
Yeah, well, I've only just noticed your doors, so they've been the same for.
It's those little black flicks. They're supposed to be like paint flicks and stuff.
Do you reckon Donald Trump is going to be arrested? Donald Trump arrives at court in Washington, D.C. to face charges.
I don't know. The thing is, like, we've got to be very careful. We've got to be very careful what we say here. But I think they have to be very careful what they do, because they have to do everything by the book. Because if they do anything that seemed to be, like, victimizing him in any way, then he'll just be let free. So
the FIA aren't doing it then, because they don't give a flying fuck. Yeah,
they will. I think they will be incredibly lenient, because they have to. Because if they don't, then and they find anything wrong in the paperwork, then his legal team will find it. And
it'd be interesting. I've just seen a BBC News thing. Anyway, they're breaking news of real life breaking news.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah, I've just had some breaking news pop up. Is it the same thing?
Yeah.
Donald Trump arrives in court in Washington.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
And our political views aside.
That's not even a political view. It's just what's going to happen.
It is interesting. Genuinely, it's interesting. Like, because from someone who lives in the UK, the perception of him from the UK is that he's just, I don't know how. Like he seems to be a bit of a Boris Johnson, you know, a bit of a buffoon.
Sorry, yeah, that's the point. Like the perception of the UK is a bit like Boris
not
Johnson.
Not seem to know Hang anything, on. Just seems to be a bit of a hot mess all the time.
Yeah.
And seems to just be involved in a lot of illegal stuff, but that might just be the narrative coming out about him. So we just don't know what to believe, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, thing is that I don't believe anything in tabloids and anything like that, because everything is just manufactured and twisted to suit whatever narrative they want to spin that week. So I try not to get too held up on headlines. So just kind of trust the system.
Yeah.
But that's politics for us. Hello. Sorry, we're slightly late recording this week. I don't even know why we're late recording this week.
Because I ended up last week being told that I was doing an advert after we'd done this podcast last week. And then I ended up filming an advert in a place called Murphy's Ice Cream, which was yummy. Nice. So I got loads of free ice cream. Nice. But I didn't get loads. I had a few bits of ice cream. Which is down in Dingle, which is not far from me. So it was quite nice.
And this is episode 99 of the Monkey Seat Podcast.
99 podcast reviews.
And we're recording it on the day that I finally watched the final episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It was all very emotional.
Oh, is it finished as a series then?
Yeah, it finished like 2021, I think. Mm-hmm. But I've only just got around to seeing it. It only just came on Netflix, well, probably about a year ago. But because I've been working through it with Emily, gradually, we finally got to the last episode yesterday, but it's a two-parter. So we watched the final part about an hour ago.
All right.
So yeah. Nine-nine!
It's always sad, like when series end, like Succession final series, I was like, that's over. And what am I watching at the moment? I'm watching Righteous Gemstones. Have you watched that?
No.
It's quite good. Quite very funny. And I'm also watching Young Sheldon, but Channel 4 are only bringing them out weekly at the moment. So it's like,
I've never seen it.
It's quite good. But you never saw the other one. You never finished watching Thingy Bob.
I never finished watching Big Bang. But I've seen pretty much all of them over the last few years because Emily watches it all the time. So
yeah.
Yeah, I've pretty much seen all the episodes now at some point, but I never finished it in real time. No.
There we go. Are we actually going to talk about Formula One today?
We could do. We probably could do. I mean, it wasn't
Tom and I just having a catch up.
Yeah. It was okay. It was all right. It was an all right Grand Prix. It was fine. It wasn't kind of what I was hoping. I was hoping for fireworks because Belgium needs a good race to kind of put it back in the spotlight. But I think you've probably got opinions about the race, I'm assuming, based on the comments that were coming out. Just like about Belgium as a Grand Prix venue as a whole. I get the feeling that you're not as enamoured with it as I am.
Right. Should we do the sprint review of what I thought happened in the sprint?
Yeah, we'll do the sprint and then we'll give it a
because actually
rest
that
for
was exciting.
That was a decent.
Actually, do you know what? Yeah. So
I prefer the sprint to the race because of you know Piastri, but you know.
Yeah. Oh, just because we actually had racing because it was fun because it made entertaining viewing. Yeah, any of those things.
Go for it.
Oh, look, I haven't got a clue what the feck we are doing here at the start. Why the feck are we here? Anyway, so now we're doing 1, 2, 3, 4 formation laps. And now it's 11 laps. Someone explain the fuck what this is onto me because I haven't got a clue. We're doing 11 laps. Are we doing 10? I don't know. Why are they not all coming in? Oh, yeah, because so they started off on. It was a wet race officially, so they all had to start on wets because of formation behind the safety car. So they all had to start on wets, but it wasn't wet enough to be on wets because no one actually likes the wets because they're pointless tires. So why do we even have the wets to then come into intermediates? But I thought that they might all come into intermediates, but then they didn't come into intermediates. One of each team came in. Was that a planned miss, or was that just so they didn't double stack? Because in theory, you could have double stacked for that much anyway. They all didn't come in, and Piastri did go in, and Verstappen stayed out. Lap 2, is it? Not a fucking clue. Anyway, it could be lap 2. It could be lap 6. I got so confused. Piastri's in and nearly drives. Oh, no, Verstappen's in, and then nearly drives into Lando on the way out. A few unsafe releases, but Piastri leads. Hell yeah. Ricky in the lead. Lap 3 or 4. Or eight, I don't know. Anyway, birthday boy, aka Alonso, thinks he's having a dance floor, thinks he's on the dance floor doing some twirls and in another fucking safety car. Ricky restart from Piastri and then the inevitable Verstappen taking over. That was always going to happen.
Yeah.
Gasly in third. When did that happen? How did that happen? I have literally no idea. Maybe Ferrari should fire their boss if this is what happens when you fire your boss. Why was he fired anyhow? Yeah, well, I don't understand that. Because someone tell me. Why was your man fired from... who was his name? Omar. Why was he fired? Anyway. Sergeant was speeding. He is a true Ricky. Bless him. Oh, hang on. Ham is having a go at Perez. Good fight, but Perez is dropping. Both Ferraris gone past. And Lando is coming through, but doesn't. What's going on with Perez? No rear grip. Damage? There was a hole in the side. And Perez has gone off. and thank fuck back on before we ended up with another safety car. I don't know. I can't even understand my writing. He's getting used to being in the back there. That was a racing incident. It was a racing incident. There was no other thing about it. So that's the end of that.
I'm sure we'll discuss it.
Perez DNF. What's the point if you're not getting any points? What's the point of putting him in a car full stop? Anyway, Russell slowly coming up. Fuck's sakes. 5-second penalty for Hamilton. 5 seconds? Like, seriously, what the actual fuck? Seriously, are they insane? And Danny Ric is out of the points. That's disappointing. I hate Russell even more now because he's now kicked Danny Ric out of the points. Norris after Leclerc, but not enough time, I don't think. Sainz pulled away from Leclerc. Who's the lead driver there? Sainz or Leclerc? Interesting. How is Piastri 6 seconds behind Verstappen after 6 laps? Is this going to be the season where Red Bull win everything? Is that a thing ever being done? Well done, Piastri. Fair fucks to the Aussie.
Yeah, fair. So, yeah.
I don't know. I obviously wrote this as I was going through it and then never looked at it again. Not got a clue what I was talking about after.
So going back to the beginning about the double stacking and everything, it was hang on. This burp that I've been promising since the live stream started, it keep threatening to come, and then but it's not coming. Okay, it stopped again. Right. So the trouble is, when you're the first car in the pit lane, then you come in the pits, and then everyone follows you. You pull in, and because you're at the front when you're the first car in, that means that you have to wait for everyone to go past you before you can leave your pit box. So if Verstappen would have come in, he would have had to wait for probably half the field to go by, or at least till the cars go by and there's a big enough gap for him to sneak out. So he would have got a big cut on my arm. Don't know where that came from. So that would have been disastrous for Verstappen. But with Perez starting, what, eighth or sixth or something around there, the fact that he came in from the middle of that pack into the first box, there wasn't as many cars that had to go past, which means that he was able to get out without having to wait. And then the cars that were further down the pit lane, he was then able to jump them because they had to wait for him.
Mm-hmm. How did that go?
It went really well, because instead of being what I expected, if they'd have brought Max in, it would have been Perez being left out to dry and then Max dropping to the back. That's probably what would have happened if Verstappen had pitted. But in the end, it ended up Perez P4 and Verstappen P2, which I think is amazing damage limitation for that. Considering what happened, I know it's a different, completely different scenario, because we had full wets to Inters. Excuse me, there it is. It's finally come. Full wets to Inters in Hungary in 2021. And Hamilton was literally left on the grid on his own, because if he'd have come in, he would have cycled to the back. And if he didn't come in, and it was such a big pace deficit, he was at the back anyway when he did come in. So it was a different scenario, but it was better. I mean, it was basically the same management.
But every team did that. But every team.
Yeah, so every team put their lead driver in, apart from Red Bull, because Max was the one that stood to lose the most by coming in. And plus, given the speed he's got in that car, odds are he was going to be able to do a decent enough lap to only lose a few places. As it was, he only lost one place. So it showed it was the right decision, because he would have lost a hell of a lot more than that if he'd have come in the box. But yeah, the trouble is, even if there was space, if you had say you had Norris in second and Piastri in 15th, in theory, the space there to double stack. But the trouble is, if you then come into your pit box and then you've got a big line of cars going past, you then can't get out the way of the following car in time. So that's why they all just opted to bring the first car in. So yeah, I think that was fun. That was fun to see. I love it when stuff like that happens.
I couldn't get my head around the formation lap thing.
Yeah. So the thing is that the problem was, were you watching on Sky? I don't have to put up Sky anymore.
Why?
Because I figured out that you can use a certain Amazon VPN. Fire Stick to your TV with a VPN on it, and then you can watch it on TV.
Nice.
I don't have to put up with Sky anymore. So, just taking a swig. I think the way it was being reported was really bad, because they were saying, oh, we don't know what's going on. We'll read the regulations then. Clearly states in the regulations, when it's a safety car start, they will continue to go round in formation laps, and every formation lap reduces the race distance by one. The only difference was this was a sprint, so it was unprecedented. We didn't know anything was different, but they didn't say anything was different. So why would you assume something was different because it was a sprint? So, they were just saying it's a formation lap. It's another formation lap. So, of course, it's going to reduce the race distance by one. By each. That's in the regulations. That's been that way for a very long time. I can't remember, but it's going to be decades. So there was a couple of times where that happened, and there's a couple of times where Martin Brundle just didn't seem to know the rules.
But why do the formation laps?
It's sighters to see what the track conditions are like. So the safety car driver can be seeing what the track conditions are like. You can see it, and then they can look at the cars on track, see how the cars are handling. The drivers can give feedback on it as well. And if it's a case of go around once, and this is still a bit treacherous, go around again, those cars shift at full speed. They'll shift a bathtub of water per tire every second. So what better way to clear the track than to send 20 cars around, going around at half pace? He's still going to clear like a third of a bathtub in that time. So that's going to clear the track a lot quicker than just sitting and waiting. So if it's only a couple of laps, 2, 3, 4, 5 laps, then I would rather that, so we got going quicker, rather than just sitting there waiting for the track to dry. So I think the FIA
Why do we even have wet tires then? Just to be removal for formation laps.
The problem is,
we're never going to race on wet tires.
Yeah, they call it a safety car tire, don't they? But the problem is,
this is true.
Especially with the new aerodynamics, the floor aero, it creates a lot more spray. So the spray is the problem. And if they can find a way to combat the spray, then we can race in those conditions.
Which is these mud flaps they're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, but that first iteration was very unsuccessful. So it didn't really stop the spray, because it stopped the spray from the tyres. But the trouble is, a lot of the spray comes from the diffuser. So it's not really, I mean, the tyres do create spray, obviously, but they need to find something that deflects the diffuser as well.
But also, it's the spray that's clearing the track. So all
but you wouldn't need to clear the track if you had wet tyres that could do the job. Pirelli have said the wet tyre isn't as good. I mean, it's nowhere near as good as the old Bridgestone and Michelin wet tyres. You could literally drive through a flood in. But the problem is the spray. And if you can lose the spray, yes, the track will be wetter, but that doesn't matter because we'd have tyres that can deal with it.
Hmm.
And then you can just drive.
Yeah. But then the problem is, I just don't know how. It's just pointless now at the moment. As soon as it gets a bit rainy, we can't race for years.
Yeah, it has been for years. This is why people always say, oh, it's going to rain. Well, no, rain is not a good thing. Rain is not a good thing for racing. A sprinkle of rain during a race is great. But when they always seem to get it where it starts raining just before the race. And all that does is everyone starts on wet tyres. We lose a load of the race distance because of safety cars.
Yeah.
Everyone drives around the safety car for a bit. As soon as there's a dry line, they switch to dry tyres, but nobody can overtake because you've got a dry line. And as soon as you go offline, you crash. So nobody overtakes. So what you want is a dry start and then for it to rain about 15 minutes into the race.
Yeah.
In Spa, potentially, you don't want that because we don't want to see people dying. Taking dry tyres through Eau Rouge and Radeon in the wet is not a good idea. So I can fully understand why they delayed the start of the sprint.
But they should just have some wet tyres and they should be able to drive in the rain. It's so pointless. It's mad that we
can lose the spray. They can lose the spray, then great. We touched on the Hamilton-Perez thing. Yeah, I'm in agreement. It's a racing incident. I think the conditions play a part. If that's in dry conditions,
that was not
then
a 5-second penalty.
If that's in there, that's a typical example of them looking at the situation and policing the situation based on what happened, as opposed to the incidents. So they were punishing
Perez,
the cause.
Not DNF'd.
If they both carry on, then that's not a 5-second penalty. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter where the foul happens. It doesn't matter where the foul happens. It's either a penalty or it's a free kick, you know, in football. Same thing with this. It's like, it doesn't matter what happens as a result of the infraction. Yeah. If it's an infraction, you get the penalty. If it isn't, you don't. It doesn't matter if the guy carries on or, you know, prime example, Silverstone in 2021, Max Verstappen in the barrier, Hamilton gets a 10-second penalty. And that, for me, was harsh, even though Verstappen ended up, you know, having his car destroyed and being out of the race. That was still, for me, a harsh penalty. But I'll let it go. It's fine. But you get that kind of stuff all the time. And they do. They will base it on the result as opposed to the result of the accident as opposed to what actually happened, which frustrates the hell out of me. But if that's in dry conditions, nothing gets done.
Nothing,
as far as I'm concerned.
Piastri obviously getting up there,
epic,
and great.
Norris had some damage on his car, didn't he? That's what put him off.
And it's hard because actually, it's looking to the average viewer, had you not really delved into the damage on Norris's car, that Piastri is doing better than Norris at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Piastri's doing great. His race pace, generally, his race management isn't as good as Lando's yet, but that's to be expected. He's a rookie. So anyone can drive fast. People can drive fast. So that's great, but you need to be able to do it consistently and manage your race. Like, he wears his tyres out too quickly at the moment. That'll come in time. Hamilton was like that when he started. Verstappen was like that when he started. They were both very heavy on their tyres.
I do feel like, for me, and you'll hate me for saying this, but I do feel like Piastri is the next world champion compared to Lando.
Well, I don't know at the moment. It depends when the car becomes competitive. I genuinely don't think that. I think Piastri is the future of McLaren, because I don't think Norris will stick around long enough to become a world champion at McLaren. So I think Piastri is the one that, when that car
becomes...
I don't
think Piastri's going to stick around.
I think he will. I think
he's got to be eyeing that Red Bull seat.
I think he'll be there. I think McLaren took a big gamble on him, and I think the loyalty for Piastri, he will be, I think he's got minimum of two with an option of a third. I think there'll be an extension beyond, because the car's on a upward trajectory. He'll be there beyond 2026. I'm not convinced Lando will be. I hope he will be. Don't get me wrong. But that driver lineup is the most dynamic and impressive driver lineup in Formula One at the moment, or it certainly will be in a couple of years once Oscar gets a bit more experience and Lando Norris becomes the finished article once he's got a few race wins under his belt. But I think that's the most exciting driver lineup in Formula One at the moment. There's so many meh lineups. That's one that really gets your heart pumping.
Yeah. No, I think there's a good battle between them in a respectful way as well. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And anyone that says, oh, Lando's getting the preferential strategies. No, he isn't. It's only because they were worried about the undercut to Hamilton. It was unfortunate, but at the end of the day, Oscar got damage anyway, plus his race management on his tyres wasn't as good. So Lando just would have been allowed past anyway. It wouldn't have made any difference to the result. It just means Lando would have been delayed behind Piastri. Yeah. So for the team, it was the lucky thing to happen. So, no. But again, that will improve. He's done, 12 races in his Formula One career. He will be to be driving this well at this stage is epic. So,
look at the other rookies, the DeVries and Sargeant, you know.
Yeah, and I did hear an interesting...
And that Williams isn't the most amazing car. Do you know what I mean? So
I heard an interesting stat that Karen Chandhok has done one more race than Nick de Vries in Formula One.
Skybox?
I heard that on the race on their Bring It Back V10s podcast. It's, they were talking about one of the seasons where Chandhok was racing, and they said, well, he got one more race than Nick de Vries did before he was replaced by Sakun Yamamoto. And in the words of Karen Chandhok, Sakun Yamamoto and his bags and bags of yen.
Compared to his bags and bags of
dinar, rupees. Is it? Oh, rupees, yeah.
Rupees.
Yeah.
Isn't he Indian?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the other thing was
Alpine, the shitstorm around Alpine at the start of the weekend with Otmar going.
And the head of race and the racing director who's been there for 17 years.
No, 34 years. Double it.
34 years.
Yeah, double it.
Where did I get 17 years out from?
I don't know. And then Pat Fry going to Williams as well. Which is.
Yeah. What is cool. What is going on?
The whole.
So Pat Fry. Who's Pat Fry? Tell me who Pat Fry is.
He was the. I think he was the chief technical officer there. He has been in Formula One for a very long time. He's been at lots of different teams. He was at Benetton, which is what Alpine is now. In the 90s, with he was there when it was Schumacher and Ross Brawn in the 90s. He went to, I can't remember if he went to Ferrari with that lot when they went with Schumacher. He went to, he was back at Renault for a bit. He was at McLaren. He was at Williams. He's been around. He was part of the whole restructuring at McLaren. He just went there on a short-term project for 2 years to kind of basically rescue them when they were just massively in the doldrums. Now he's going back to Williams. So he's obviously just realized that, you know, things aren't going to improve at Alpine. So, whereas Williams is an upwardly mobile team that's making genuine progress.
But Williams also, I mean, I quite like Vowles. He needs to stop mumbling. He sounds like me. But I can't hear him. You can tell he's a very intelligent man that's going to lead that team in a very different way, from a very technical way, from my understanding. I think what's going to be interesting is that car's going to have lots of technical innovations over the years.
Yeah.
More so, you know, you look at the underfloor of the Williams now compared to the Red Bull. I wouldn't be surprised if the underfloor of the Williams is better than the Red Bull in a couple of years' time, once Vowles has got his feet under there.
I mean, that'd be nice. I can't see better than better than
I think technically, I'm not talking about the car being amazing. I think the technicality of things and the innovation will be there compared to it being a super. That team's gonna come out with the Ross Brawn double diffuser type thing Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
That's what it feels like Williams is going to come out with, compared to Red Bull, which is going to have another penalty, I'm sure, for going over the budget cap this year.
We don't know anything about that yet. They've not finished the accounts.
I know, but I'm placing my bets quite strongly on that one.
I would be surprised if it's Alpine, because they haven't spent enough money to do it, because Renault want to do it all on the cheap. So I'll be very surprised if Alpine have breached the cost cap.
Yeah,
they I can understand a procedural breach. I can understand that, like Aston Martin did last year.
They want to do it on the cheap and gave Otmar 12 races to try and get into the top. It's just like, what? How does that even work?
I think that was probably like partially down to everything that happened last year. And apparently Laurent Rossi wanted to sack him at the start of the year, but they just had no one lined up. And obviously when Rossi's been moved on to special projects, he's the new guys coming in have decided they just want a fresh start and just get rid of him now. So,
It wasn't Otmar's fault. I don't like Otmar. I don't think he's any good, but I can't put any of this at his door.
No, I mean, it's clearly Alpine, and someone of Otmar's experience is not going to forget how to run a team. I do think Otmar did make some mistakes, but I don't think that what he's done at Alpine is anything worthy of having him dismissed.
No.
By mutual consent.
No, not at all. Yeah.
No.
And to get rid of your racing director who's been there for so long.
Yeah. Permain will land on his feet. There's going to be so many people interested in him. But 34 years is a long time to spend in one team.
Yeah.
I can understand it in Formula One. Like, people like Pat Fry have been in Formula One for even longer than that. But he's been at about 10 different teams. So.
But was this all about trying to control the narrative? Why didn't they just sack him now? Sack him today, and it would have just sat over the summer. And by the time we got to the race, we'd have all forgotten about it and wondered who this new guy was.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense.
Do you know what I mean?
Why
sack him? Why?
Unless it got out.
Why announce it?
Unless it got out in the public, within the company, and they were afraid that it was going to come out over the weekend. So they thought, well, we'll just be in charge of it. We'll announce it, because then we're in control of when it comes out. That's the only thing I can think of, because it does seem nonsensical to release that information on like a Thursday or a Friday before a Grand Prix weekend. Just leave it till Monday. You do it. You literally drop a grenade in the pond and go off on your summer break like Alonso did last year.
Where were Netflix? Were they in the Alpine garage yesterday?
Who knows,
Saturday?
But they'll be able to get hold of archival footage, though, won't they? They'll be able to get hold of stuff. So, I mean, that'd be nice if they were. That'd be hilarious. But I still not finished Netflix from this year yet. Because me and the wife watch it together. We watched about the first 5 episodes, and then we just kind of stopped watching it. So we're still not watched the end of this year's one.
That's great.
Now we finish Brooklyn 99, might well finish it.
Take it out. Right, shall I do the race?
Go for it.
Right, how many yellows, safety cars, reds are we thinking? 10? 10? Piastri faked it on the start and has damaged. Sainz locked up and seemingly smashed into him. Checo leads, shockingly. Sainz also has damage. Oh, yeah, because Piastri had damage. Albon up into the top 10. Fighting with Stroll and moved up to 9th on lap 2. Sainz has to have a penalty, surely. Weirdly, there is no VSC or anything in clearing Piastri out of the way. What the hell is going on? Norris falling back slowly. Shite in the dry. Ah, that'd be it. And Williams is still doing well. Lap 6, Norris, Mag and Rick in the pit. Verstappen taking over Hamilton now. Oh, yeah, because he started in 6th. Lap 8, Sainz changing tyres. Why bother? Literally, why bother? I don't answer that. Oh, rain in 20 minutes. Do we think that will happen? Verstappen has moved into 2nd. Looking forward to Verstappen-Perez fight. Oh, yeah, actually, that probably won't happen. Albon's having a great drive. Don't know why, but he is. Max and JP tiffing away like a married old couple or just someone that's in an abusive relationship. Can't quite tell. Max being the man of the relationship and not listening. Can these tires last? His response, I can't see the rain map. No shit, Sherlock. Although if you were Alonso, you probably could. for Spa, I am bored. It's actually a really boring track. Like, nothing's happening. Absolutely nothing. Max now officially in the lead at lap 17. It was mad watching Perez and Max. Their driving styles are insanely different. Perez looks like he was twitching everywhere. It was like a bit, Max just so smooth. You can see the difference, physically see it, and I've never been able to see that, you know. Spoke too soon about Albon, bless him, going backwards. Rain in 2 to 3 minutes. Lap 18. Why the feck is going on with Lando in the pit before rain to put on softs? Is this to hang it out as long as possible, or what was the actual plan there? Perez, lap 19, Perez driving back so he can double stack in the rain for Verstappen, or is Verstappen that fast? Like, Verstappen's just blasting off. The most exciting and dangerous thing about this track is the weather, and otherwise it's very boring. Well, hell from Verstappen stacking it on lap 22 as the rain appears, and Stroll pits for stops. Rain, but not enough. As Nanny Plum would say, jelly, jelly, but not enough. Anyway, that won't be that exciting. Lap 25, signs for tyres, pointless for so long. Albon, great stop and pull out. Advantage for being the slowest. Yeah, bored now. Yeah, I gave up. I literally gave up watching. Like, I had it in the background, but I actually gave up caring. I was so bored by it. I know that Lando ended up somehow in sixth or something, or seventh, and did really well from where he was. But actually, it was a really boring race.
So it's a bit of a purist Grand Prix in that it's...
Why are we here? Is that literally things, it? And no, we're now there for another 3 years.
So
fuck
it's
my life.
Like going through going through that the first hairpin up through Eau Rouge and Radion and down to Kemmel Strait and into Blanchimont, it's just an awesome section of the track. And then going in through just like to watch. Like if you watch at Silverstone, watching the cars going through Maggots and Becketts,
oh yeah,
for example, is phenomenal. No one's ever going to overtake there, but yeah, it's phenomenal. But at least on that part of the Spa circuit, it's going to be a DRS overtake, but you're likely to have an overtake going into the Kemmel Strait, down the Kemmel Strait into Blanchimont. Then you've got a bit of a right-lefty twisty bit. Then you go into the Pouhon corner, which is a huge... if you remember when we had Steph Wilson on the podcast, he likened the Indy 500 to being Pouhon four times every lap. And that's basically what the Indy 500 was. Basically just taking Pouhon a thousand times, whatever it was.
It still makes me giggle. The child in me giggles every time I hear Pouhon.
It's I can't remember how it's spelled, but it's like Pouhon, basically.
Yeah, but it just sounds... everyone says Pouhon.
And then following down and a massive long straight to the bus stop chicane and then back into the new lap. It's actually a really good, fun track with lots of opportunities of overtaking. But I think, to be honest, DRS kills it because everyone just waits for the Kemmel Straight. If you get rid of DRS, I think this is a much more exciting race.
It's just that, like, nothing.
All you got to do is get a good exit out of the hairpin, and then you go through La Source, keep tight. You don't overtake into La Source because then whoever you get ahead of, you're compromising your exit, and then the person behind you is just going to drive past you on the Kemmel Straight. So you just wait for the Kemmel Straight.
Yeah,
which is just boring. So get rid of DRS.
Yeah,
for Spa, just for Spa, or you know, as a trial, get rid of it and then see what the racing's like. I think you'll find the racing will be a lot better because you'll find people doing dive bombs into the
which I think is what made it. I think that's what made the thingy bob interesting. The
sprint
because there was no DRS.
Yeah,
you know, I generally think that's what made it exciting.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting race. And I think that's what we need more. Like, it feels like we either go there and it rains and everyone and nothing happens. And it's a bit weird with the rain, which sort of happened at this beginning of the spring, or we go there and it's a really boring race where no one does anything because they can't do anything. And we get excited about someone having a 3 second pit stop instead of a 2 second pit stop. And that's what it seemingly came down to. It's not even about strategy. It's just how quickly you can change your tyres.
Yeah, I mean, you knew as soon as Max Verstappen got past Lewis Hamilton, you knew that it was just a matter of time before he got past Leclerc. It was just a matter of time before he got past Perez. And then when he got past Perez, in what, 20 laps, he pulled out 22 seconds on him in the same car.
I know.
That's just...
I mean, I was talking mental. To... Who was I talking to? I was talking to... my colleague. saying about Hamilton, because he's not a Formula One fan. He was like, oh yeah, Hamilton's... isn't just Hamilton just winning everything at the moment? Isn't it just because it's his car? And I went, yeah, you could say it's because of this car. But then you look at his teammate who's 20 seconds behind him in the same car.
I'm assuming you're talking about Verstappen here, because you said Hamilton.
Oh, sorry, Verstappen. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, you did.
Verstappen. well, even looking at Hamilton, you can tell there's drivability compared to the car. Do you know what I mean? It's but Verstappen is so far ahead, and the driving styles were insane. Like, is it through Le Rouge and things? Rouge, is it? Is that the one?
Rouge and Arrédion.
Arrédion. You know, when they were coming through there, like, the difference in driving styles was just mad. Perez was like jerking across the road almost. He wasn't even defending. He was
hanging on to it, wasn't he?
Yeah. And Verstappen, you could just see this gliding, smooth drive. Yeah. And it was just like, what? Is he on his mobile? It looked like he was on his mobile phone. I'm not even joking.
Well, to be honest, that's like probably down to setup differences, that Max just got a much more smooth setup, and Perez wasn't able to do that.
But it feels like, okay, even with that, like, so this is the thing. Okay, so to then say that he didn't get a good setup, is that what is slowing him down by 20 seconds?
Well, I mean, it's not gonna help, is it? I mean, like we said before, anyone can drive fast. So, you know, Perez can put a good lap together, but it's how you set up a car and how you tweak a car to work for you.
Yeah.
That's a huge part of race management. And I'm pretty sure Max does set his car up more for the race than Perez does as well, because he knows that he's got the pace of him over qualifying anyway, so he can afford to drop a bit of pace off. You see, he's a lot closer to all the other cars anyway in qualifying. And then it's in the race that he just pulls out. It's like what Hamilton was doing when he was teammates with Bottas. Bottas would beat him in qualifying quite frequently, but Lewis would always get ahead because Lewis had he would almost always get ahead because he was going for race pace.
Yeah. But it just feels like even driving styles to see that it was very, very different, you know. And that was the mad thing. And it was like, you know, it was a good weekend for the Alpines as well, really.
I mean, you say that, but it was a better weekend, but McLaren still outscored them over the weekend. Because you got Piastri second, and then Lando's wherever he finished in the sprint. I can't remember now.
Seventh?
Something like that. He got a couple of points, I think. And then, so there's eight, there's like 7 points there, and then a couple of, so probably 8 points there. And then what was it? 6 points for Gasly because he was behind Piastri. And then in the race, Lando was seventh. So overall, they outscored the Alpines anyway. So it was better, but they still lost ground on McLaren. And they're not going to get passed by anyone else, because you look at the championship, it's they're on 57 points, so they're 46 points behind McLaren.
Yeah,
but then Williams are 46 points behind them, and Williams are going to be scoring a hell of a lot less points than Alpine are for the rest of the season, realistically. So
yeah,
Alpine, they've got to be looking at McLaren, but the odds are they're probably just going to be locked in sixth place for the rest of the season. Now, Williams aren't going to score another 46 points this season, and Alpine will still get more points. So
I think there is sort of, so like, going back to that discussion, was it right to get rid of Otmar? If you were the boss of
not
of
right
team,
now, no, absolutely
doing?
Not. I mean, you could maybe make a case for it in the summer break, but then it would have to be, we decided that this is no longer working going forward, so we decided to replace Otmar with, I don't know, say Matteo Binotto or whatever. You know, I don't think they're going to go down that route, but to have
rumor, wasn't it?
Yeah, it still is a rumor, but to have a succession plan in place. And then say, right, we have decided we're going to remove Otmar and we're putting so-and-so in this role. But they've just basically just fired everyone, yeah. And it's just rudderless now. It's just a ship that's just plowing on regardless. And it's just an embarrassment.
Who's in charge? There's no names in charge.
No, I think Matt Harmon. No... I think Matt Harmon, who's kind of chief technical officer, he heads up the engine department of Alpine, I think. But he has a kind of finger in both pies. He's kind of stepped up, but he's not officially in charge. But he's just kind of just taking over short term. But he's not even named as interim boss. It's this I don't actually know his name. It sounds like Bandini, but it's not that. It's someone like that. I can't remember his name now. I don't know who he is, but he's coming from outside Formula One. He's only been there for a couple of months anyway. He's literally just been put. He was put below Rossi, and then Rossi was sacked. Sorry, moved.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you can make an argument for Otmar going, but that's your prerogative. If you're running an F1 team, you're the one spending the £135 million a year on the project, so you're allowed to do that if you want to. But Bruno Famin. That's it. Yeah, I don't see the Bruno or Dino or something like that. The timing was definitely wrong. But the Lando strategy, you're saying about Lando Norris and his strategy. So he started on the mediums, but just had absolutely no pace. And the trouble was with that car in the dry.
Yeah, which made sense because it was wet.
Yeah, it was really fast in the middle part of the race. But it was an absolute sitting duck in the straights. Yeah. And because you can't overtake through that middle section of the track. They couldn't do anything with their pace. So all that was happening was every time they got on the straight, they were overtaken and then they couldn't catch back up. So he needed to be in clear air. So getting off those tires as quickly as possible was the right thing to do to put himself in clean air. Trouble was they hadn't done any laps on the hard and then they just couldn't fire the hards up. So then they just, when it started raining, they switched to softs just to think, well, these are going to be the best tires for these conditions. He was putting in laps like 2 or 3 seconds a lap quicker than even Max Verstappen. 6 seconds a lap quicker than other cars immediately around him, flew back up through the order, and then somehow managed to nurse those tires to the end of the race, which is just a phenomenal performance. It wasn't his fault. It wasn't his fault that he had a high downforce setting. That was down to his team because that's the only wing they were able to bring. So that's why he got a great driver rating for me this weekend, despite having an average sprint.
So my French isn't that good. So I apologize for this. So my trying to understand what this guy has been in the past. He did something with transmissions Motura in Peugeot. Don't know what he did there. Then he was responsible for something in Peugeot Citroën Group. Became a director of Peugeot Sport for 13 years. So probably comes from rallying then, I'm guessing, Peugeot. Then worked in the FIA as Deputy Secretary of General Sport.
Okay, he might have been part of the Peugeot Hypercar project, maybe, in WEC.
No, Pikes Peaks, Rallycross, Dakar.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, very much rally.
So he's a racer then, so he's not like world. A pen pusher.
And then... But no, he's a director of racing. He didn't race himself.
Yeah, but what I mean director. Is like he's come from racing. He's not like just someone. He's not a lawyer they put in charge. He's not Manisha Kaltenborn or anything like that.
No. 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 Not at all. He was director of sector of general sport at the FIA, but he only lasted a year there, and then he went into Alpine Racing SAS. In March 22 and then went in July 23, which is now, he's now officially the VP of motorsport. So he's not even the CEO, he's the VP of motorsport. So he's actually above the CEO in a weird way. He's Alpine's man or Renault's man.
When he was bought in
charge of motorsport,
he was put in between Rossi and the team. So Otmar was reporting to him, who was reporting to Rossi. He did the job for two weeks, and then Laura Rossi got sacked or moved on. And then he was left. He was basically thrown into taking charge, and now he seems to be in charge of the team as well.
Yeah, he's a VP. So he's basically he's sort of the middle manager. He's sort of, yeah, he's top dog, but he's in a businessy terms, he's sort of in charge, but he's in charge of the whole Alpine motorsports section, and now he's having to deal with the F1 as a section. And then, so he's not CEO of Alpine. He's not CEO of Alpine F1. He's VP. He's sort of in the middle of the two.
Right. Okay. I'm bored of talking about Alpine now. They piss me off.
Yeah. It's just sad to watch a team self implode like that.
Hmm. So, Malfi Max, should we talk about him and Jean-Pierre Lambiasi?
Like, it's, I don't even know what is going on with them.
Emily had a really good, kind of view on this.
Go on.
Given that she's a Max Verstappen fan, so okay. Obviously it's going to come from that side of things.
Yeah, but she also married you. We already know she's mentally unstable.
Well, there is that, yeah. So she said, given like Max's history, well documented history of what he's gone through, and where he was as he grew up with obviously his father. I don't know anything about his mother, but there's well documented issues with the temperament of his father.
Mm.
That probably the way that GP was speaking to him over the radio is the way that you get a response from Max, because that's how he's been brought up. His father would probably, this is not me like saying this is what's happened. This is just the way I see it. Jos Verstappen has probably spoken to him in that manner to get, you know, to get a reaction from him all through his childhood. So that is probably the way that you get a response from Max Verstappen. If you say to him, "Oh, Max, let's do this, let's do that," he's probably just going to respond in a negative manner. So if you say to him, "Well, that was fucking stupid, wasn't it? Pull your head out your ass and do what I tell you," that's the way that you get a response from him. Because
yeah.
So I think that was a really astute way of looking at it, and I think that's the way that they have been like trying. They've always worked together like that. I've never heard quite so much sarcasm from him before.
Yeah,
but I do get the feeling that it's great now because they're winning. But if they stop winning and you start talking to Max like that and you're not his father, what response are you going to get?
Yeah.
Because I've heard him go on massive tirades on the radio before.
Mm.
So I just think that if things...
Why is he called GP?
Because his name is Jean-Pierre Lambiasi.
Yeah. So where is the G and the P?
Jean-Pierre.
Yeah, but Jean-Pierre is all one word. That's like calling... That's me like calling you TM.
Well, no, well,
do you know what I mean?
It's just a nickname, Carl.
It's stupid. But,
Sebastian Vettel's old race engineer. I've forgotten what his first name was now, but his surname was Roccalan, and they called him Rocky.
Yeah, well, I can understand that one, and I can understand Bono, weirdly.
Yeah, Bonington, even though it's not Bono.
I know.
Pete Bonington. It's not Pete Bonington, is it? It's Bono.
Bonington. Yeah, but I can even understand that. But yeah, I can't understand the GP one. Anyway, like GP sounds like his surname should be Piastri or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, not whatever his surname is. It really confused me. Anyway, I just think, like, this is the whole thing. Should we even have the radios on air? Do we all need to hear this bollocks half the time?
I think it's entertaining. I'm quite up for it.
Turned you down. Like
many have tried, they've all failed.
Yeah. I've tried to counsel you, but that didn't work. I just feel it's a bit painful, and I don't know whether it shines a good example to people in the workplace. You should not be speaking to anyone like either of them do.
Well, it's not just those two, though.
If me and you spoke to people like that in the workplace, we would have, and it was publicly aired, we would be in trouble, I'm sure.
I think the optics for the company are probably not great, but that's really down to the company to manage, if that's how they want to be seen. they might want to be seen that way because Red Bull is all of is an edgy brand. They probably want to be seen in the way that, that you know that's the way they are.
Yeah.
So, but it's up to them, really, isn't it? But
yeah, I just feel like it's not a very good example of, you know.
Yeah, but I don't want it to be just like this sterilized surgical atmosphere. I'd rather have a bit of color in there and a bit of a bit of edge to it. Especially if things start going wrong, that's going to be a really interesting relationship to watch. So,
yeah,
I've got no problem with it at the moment.
I wonder if they will, if it will go wrong.
But it's not just them; it's in the heat of battle.
And if it does go wrong, how quickly does GP leave?
I don't think he's been there a long time. I don't think he'll leave. He's been there since he's been there about 10 years now.
Yeah,
he was brought in and he came in at the end of 2014.
And how long has he been Max's?
Ever since Max went to Red Bull. That would have been 2016, mid-2016, when he got promoted from Toro Rosso at Kvyat's expense.
Okay.
He just likes taking everything from Kvyat, doesn't he?
His job, his wife, his girlfriend, his child. Yes.
Bless. So, what's your view on the Sainz Piastri crash? Turn one.
Lap one. I'm just trying to remember. Oh, that was all Sainz's fault. That was Sainz's fault. Why did he not get a penalty?
Sainz was adamant after the race that it wasn't his fault. And How was it not? It's very divisive, actually. Like, I've heard through various outlets, like, some people are saying it's Sainz's fault, and some people are saying it's Piastri's fault. So
how was that ever Piastri's fault? Explain to me that. Well, I agree with you.
I agree with you.
Piastri was on the outside, and he was on the inside.
No, Piastri was on the inside. Piastri went up the inside into La Source.
Okay,
but
sorry.
The space was there.
And the outside, and he just kept on going.
Yeah, so Sainz was... There was plenty of space there. Piastri is moving into that position. Sainz locked up. Was heading for the back of Hamilton, and then to avoid hitting Hamilton, moved across into Piastri's path and put Piastri against the wall.
Because if he hit him at Hamilton, he would have definitely got a penalty.
Yeah. But then he's end up dramatically changing direction and impacting another car. Piastri kept his line.
Yeah.
I think Piastri said that he should have been more committed because he was very kind of a bit apprehensive going to the corner. If he'd have been more committed, he would have been much further alongside Sainz, and potentially they're just bang wheels, but then Sainz ends up kind of moving back into the center of the track and then potentially causes a bit of a bottleneck for everyone else.
So
I think it's probably poor, you know, race management from Piastri in that he put everything on the line. You're never going to win the race in the first corner, but you can definitely lose it, and he definitely did lose it in the first corner. That doesn't matter. You can argue whose fault it is till the cows come home. At the end of the day, he's still out of the race. He didn't need to be out of the race. So although I think the collision was Sainz's fault, I do think it was probably a little bit of an inexperience from Piastri there, could have just managed that situation slightly better. But first lap collisions happen. You've got 20 cars going into a hairpin. There's going to be collisions from time to time. Yeah. So I don't think I haven't marked him down for it in his driver ratings or anything.
Yeah, I don't think it was the worst thing he could have done. I just think it wasn't the best thing he could have done.
No.
You know, and I think he should have got a penalty in the basis that Hamilton got a penalty.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're very similar.
They're very similar.
Except
Sainz
was out of control. I mean, so was Hamilton, to be fair. Hamilton understeered. So they both lost control for a split second, which then caused them to make a minor connection with another car. And in both cases, it led to the other car retiring. Yeah. The only difference is Hamilton continued.
Yeah. And that's sort of the thing. It's just like, it feels very unfair.
Yeah, but we're always going to get this. I completely agree with you. I don't think it should have been a penalty for Hamilton, which means you could look at this one and say, well, maybe it's a racing incident. But given that, you know, less than 24 hours prior, Hamilton got a penalty for something very similar, different part of the track, different scenario, different conditions, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, they're quite similar incidents.
Yeah.
So you are right. I struggle with that from a consistency basis. It annoys me.
Yeah.
But yeah. So is there anything else you want to talk about from the Belgian Grand Prix, or should we do our driving dick of the day?
No, because I literally got so bored in the second half. So boring.
Okay, so obviously we'll just reiterate driver of the day. Really, for sprint weekends, it's driver of the weekend, isn't it? I think we take the sprint weekend into account on that. So based on that, I mean, my highest scoring drivers from the weekend are Verstappen, Norris and Piastri.
To be fair, I felt that, Verstappen, I don't give it to him normally, was actually probably the better driver.
Well, he did come from sixth in this one. I think it wouldn't be fair to just constantly never give him. I mean, I'm sure he cares.
That's what I'm saying. But it's not like it's Russell. Do you know what I mean? Who would never give driver of the day.
He was epically fast. He was epically fast. Once he, he probably chewed up his tyres a little bit in the early part of the race, getting past the other cars. But then as soon as they put the new tyres on, he was just so much faster than Perez and so much faster than anyone else. So,
and just had a great race throughout, and was very clean. And, although GP was having a go at him about chewing up the tyres and shit like that, actually, he was driving fine, and it was just, I don't know, half of it just feels like it was drama for a Netflix. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I actually do think he probably was driver of the day.
Yeah, I agree. Dick of the day? Well, Darren's already sent us his in our chat.
I didn't read them.
Yeah, he said Dick of the day is for him was Hülkenberg's engineer for screwing up both his qualifying sessions.
Oh, yeah.
Because he wasn't able to set a lap in both qualifying sessions. I mean, yes, but also Hülkenberg's on the track.
Yeah.
He still had to get round to the line. I mean, if the engineers weren't telling him how long he had left, then that's clearly on them. But so that's a good shout for Dick of the Day. You could go with Max as well for his comments on the radio. I'm not going to go with that.
No.
Stewarding, you could say, for the lack of consistency. You can go with Sainz for just wrecking.
Sainz.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Ricciardo for getting our hopes up.
Sainz. Yeah. Albon for getting our hopes up. Piastri for getting our hopes up. There wasn't anyone that was a major dick.
No, I've got it. Alpine.
I think Alpine just brought the whole
Alpine management structure.
Yeah, it was just a really, it was just a bit of a dickish type thing to be doing. Do you know what I mean?
I think for the first time in 99 podcasts, we are both in agreement for driver and dick of the day.
Yeah, and it's Verstappen and Alpine, which is weird. Yeah.
There we go.
It's weird that we've gone for driver of the day as Verstappen.
Yeah,
because we don't normally, bless him.
I'm not going to go through the standings because it's too depressing, but suffice to say, Ferrari are 5 points behind Aston Martin now.
Yeah.
So that's quite close. Alpine, 46 behind McLaren. Yeah, which we've already discussed. There's nothing really. Hamilton just a point behind Alonso. Sainz.
Yeah, Alonso's going backwards, isn't he?
Yeah, Sainz is now behind Russell. Russell is level with Leclerc. So Leclerc is now ahead of Sainz for the first time this year. And that's kind of it, really. There's been no movers down there. It's still just De Vries and Ricciardo with no points.
I thought of another dick of the day.
Go on.
The Red Bull team for smashing another trophy.
Yes. Yeah, Darren actually said that as well. They don't know how to look after these trophies, do they?
No. That's the second one they've smashed. There we go.
Cool. Well, that was our Belgian Grand Prix. We're going to have episode 100 soon. We're going to try and do something a little bit different for it. We're not sure what. Yeah, we've got a couple of ideas.
Tom has ideas. He'd spoken to me about.
We've kind of descended into a very unprofessional podcast. We used to be fairly slick and had scripts and things, but we don't bother doing that anymore. We just have fun with it. So we kind of want to keep it in that vein. So we don't want to do anything too over the top, but we'll try and do something a little bit special just to mark the occasion. So at some point over the summer break, we'll come back at you with episode 100. Try and do something flashy with it. Thank you very much, everyone. We'll have a great summer and we'll see you when we're back, I guess.
Yeah, see you in a bit. Have a good break. What do you reckon Otmar's going to do on his garden leave? Like, that's a really big holiday.
Gardening?
Is that an actual thing?
I don't know, maybe.